You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hey, Frank.
Oh, God. What is it, Truman? I mean, Bradley.
What do you call an entire review with someone doing a terrible, ghastly Truman Capote impression?
Agony?
Yes, that is the joke. You call it annoying, darling. You got it.
So I'll drop that now.
Good. We got 8 hours of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How long do you think I could do a Truman Capote? I asked everyone in my family. Truman Capote at Frank and Melina before one of them is like, please stop. And my wife already knew why I asked the question. She was like, please don't do that. Please don't put anyone through that. And I was like, all right. But Frank and Melina are with us, and we're reviewing The Feud, Capote versus the Swans. Now, Truman Capote, you may have heard that name before. He was a writer. Philip Seymour Hoffman, in his Oscar-winning performance, I believe, played him in something called Capote. Sandra Bullock was turning heads as a Harper Lee in a film called Infamous about Truman Capote as well.
Which came out the same year, didn't it?
No, the year after. And Toby Jones was by far, and still remains, the best Capote, on-screen Capote. He was just mesmerizing in that.
Oh, well, spoiler alert for Tom Hollander's performance, I guess.
I think a lot of the times, and maybe you two will agree, playing Truman Capote comes off as an annoying caricature. Like,
it could, yeah. By the late 60s and the 70s, he really was becoming a parody of himself. And, you know, the hat got bigger and the glasses got more. He almost looked like Elton John at a certain point toward the end of that decade anyways.
He had an incredibly unique affect. And for most of his life, he was aware of it. And, yeah, eventually kind of got in on the joke. It's kind of like what Christopher Walken does now.
Yeah. I mean, he owned it.
So Capote has these friends called, ex-friends. This series takes place over like three decades, the 60s, 70s, and some of the 80s. And he had these friends that he would call the Swans. And you had Babe Paley, played by Naomi Watts. Slim, what was her full name?
Slim Keith.
Slim's Diane Lane, playing Slim. And CZ Guest, played by
Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah, thank you. So essentially, in short, he's friends with these extravagant, stunning, wealthy, how-to-do women. He talks shit about them and is exposing all their secrets and like a big gossip column almost, except in the ink of Capote's brilliant mind.
Well, they were like excerpts. There were chapters that were published in Esquire magazine for everyone to see. So it circulated pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah. And despite the change of names, it became apparent pretty much right off the bat throughout New York society exactly who he was referring to.
Yeah.
Which did not go over well with them.
Right. So they decide to shun? Is shun the right word? I've never been in a clique like this. I'm getting everything wrong.
They canceled him.
Shun is a good word. They did cancel him. Yeah.
They kicked him off the cool table.
And that's all that they needed to do, really. They didn't have to, like, sully his name to other people. They didn't have to, like, go after him through means of, like, publicity or anything incredibly public. They just had to turn their backs to him. That's all they had to do. to exact their revenge, and they knew that it would kill him.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of knew he was this type of author, this writer before, though, because he wrote something about a woman named Anne Woodward, played by Demi Moore, who was also their friend at one time, mm-hmm. about how she may have allegedly, but definitely did, pull the trigger, ending her husband's life. And the type of turmoil that puts Demi Moore, who, wow, great performance from Demi Moore. I know that. Is that weird to say? I didn't know she was this talented. I haven't seen a Demi Moore performance in so long.
Because everyone thinks that. And the thing, she has been giving out those great performances in the last, like, decade plus. They've just been in very small projects, smaller scale projects. Okay. So we still think of Demi Moore in, like, late 90s, Demi Moore, like, G.I. Jane, Striptease, right. which did not show her to her greatest effect.
She was everywhere, yeah.
And then she spoiler alert, she commits suicide by taking some cyanide. You don't really see her until the end.
It's one of the many examples of this. While watching this, it felt like the show had forgotten that they had started that plot line. And so in the final episode, they were like, oh, crap, that's right, we got to put this back in here. So I guess we should just put it in now.
That is the thing about a Ryan Murphy jam. This is a Ryan Murphy jam, is that he, you can't count out any character, whether they're living or dead. They'll come back as a ghost, as an apparition, you know, I mean.
Or a haunting. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
We saw Jessica Lange play Truman Capote's mother, who I think herself committed suicide.
Well, if he would just read the police report, he would know more about it, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
So, no, it is a Ryan Murphy joint, but I was happy to see the opening credits, you know, right there in bold. I haven't seen this name a lot either. Gus Van Sant, mm-hmm. director. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah, and this definitely feels like a Gus Van Sant. You can see Ryan Murphy's dirty fingerprints on it in various... in various...
Frank's a big fan.
Yeah. In various...
well, I read this accusation that Murphy only knows how to do homosexual relationships if they're violent and self-loathing.
Oh, no, that was me. I said that. I'm just kidding.
Well, at first I thought that's kind of a heavy accusation. But now I'm starting to believe it.
I can't think of an example where that's not true.
That is actually incredibly true. Yeah, that's just... it's ridiculous. It's damn him and just damn him. But
yeah. So let's not dwell on that then. I wanted to talk about when I started this series, two episodes in, I'm like, okay, I can't do Mean Girls but adults. That's terrible. But as it went on, I started getting wrapped up in the society these girls lived in, these women. And wow. Gossip really can destroy someone's entire reality in this circle they're in.
People often talk, when they talk about violence, they talk about the physical violence of rarely talk about emotional violence. And I think that this film, this series, I say film because it kind of actually does feel like a film a lot of times. It's incredibly cinematic.
It feels like eight of them, in fact.
It's incredibly cinematic, but it does go back to, it reminds me of Age of Innocence, actually. You know, when people's reputations, their livelihoods, you know, their social standings can be destroyed with just like a few choice words or being excluded from certain gatherings and circles and whatnot. And I really like that. I really think that this is, you know, it does show that this is a very intoxicating world, a very intriguing world, a world of privilege and freedom to an extent. But the viciousness of it is very interesting. Like that dichotomy is, it's interesting to look at. There's no part of me that wants to be a part of this world, but as from an observational point of view, I find it really interesting. And this series does give, spoiler alert, I like this series, does give a good insight into that and the price that every person pays for being a part of that world. Lee Radswell, played by Calista Flockhart, in her case and other people's cases, they're born into this world. You know, this is just where they end up belonging to.
In the case of Truman Capote, he was very much not born into this world of society or high society. They do explore that in the third episode, which they film in a very cinema verite style. And I wish, it's one of the many examples of, while watching this, where I thought, wow, this looks incredible. It's so well put together. It throws you right into that timeline. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the story, I felt like the show wanted to sell you on how important his ascendance into society was for him and why it was so devastating why he was later ousted.
Yeah.
I felt like it didn't quite ever bring that across to me.
Yeah. It didn't.
Not only because of how slowly this story unravels, yes. But because I found myself impossible to really give a shit either way, because there was not a character in this that I didn't find despicable. And yeah, that includes Capote himself.
Well, first of all, I don't think that anybody here, these are not real portraits of people, because Ryan Murphy, whenever Ryan Murphy does something based on a true person, on a real person, it's always his version of it, of that person.
He only does sensational.
And he will, those portraits are often, as they are here, heightened and exaggerated. You know, when the first feud that took place, you know, between, it was centered on the feud between Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. And there was Olivia de Havilland was portrayed in that, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones, badly played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. And
I was going to say, who the hell thought that was good casting?
He did.
Whatever you say, Ryan. I guess
he forgot, Ryan Murphy forgot that in 2017... when that feud season came out, Olivia de Havilland was still alive and took his ass to court at 101 years old, saying, that is not my likeness. That is not my personality. I have spent, you know, all my entire career since the 30s, you know, making sure that my reputation is what it is. And that is not it. You know, this is defamation, this and that. And, took his ass to court twice, and she ultimately lost. But I think
all they have to do is throw out that word fiction.
Yeah, exactly. I think Ryan Murphy was smart to wait till like the last of the swans had died before he made this, which was, you know, Lee Radswell died in 2019.
Yeah, that was very wise of him, because as this series will show you, these women can hold a grudge.
Yeah, they can. And and I guess in a way I kind of admire them, because this is not a world for a softie, for the overly sensitive to exist in. You need to be pretty steely. You need to have some strong resolve to be able to take what the people inhabiting this world can dish out at you. But we're just seeing exaggerated portraits of these people, and in one episode we're seeing Truman's exaggerated versions of these women, and so it's an exaggerated version telling us about even more exaggerated versions of people. And by then it's like, well, okay.
By then you're like, well, this is only slight exaggeration compared to what we've seen.
I got to bring it back to you, because I think you're right about his motivations for being in this world. Like, we know that it meant a lot to him, but only because of what the way he devolves once he's ousted. But we do not get a sense of, like, I would care more if I knew exactly why this was life and death him, why he felt that this was his everything, this world was his everything. But we don't ever feel that. And so I was like, you're not in the gang anymore, but, you know, that's all we can get in terms of caring. So
I mean, that's kind of better for everyone that way, is how I ended up coming away from it. And obviously with the final shots of the finale episode,
it's a great ending. I like that ending.
I was not supposed to feel that way. That, oh, well, maybe it's better for everyone that you step away from the high society for,
yeah.
I think that does speak to one of my major issues with this series, is that maybe if it had been structured differently than it ultimately was.
It's a mess.
It's a complete utter
mess. I agree 100%.
Remember the first lady? It's like structured like the first lady was in a way. And that just drove me nuts. It's so jumbled. So jumbled.
Yeah, there were actually points where I felt like this was being told out of order, and not in a sense, and not like in a non-linear storytelling sense. I felt like I was watching the episodes out of order. There was a point where I thought maybe I skipped one, or maybe there's a glitch on Hulu where they, or it's like the Clone Wars, where it's like if you watch them out of order, suddenly it makes no sense. But that's how it ultimately felt. There's so much important character development that they wait until the second half of the final episode to bring in. And I'm like, I needed this from the beginning so that I could attach myself to the character of Truman Capote. Because if you have not read his, if you've not read the many books that have been put out about him, if you've not seen documentaries or even the fictional portrayals of him, then you're not really going to understand who he is and what is motivating him. You have to wait until the end. And I thought that was a major mistake.
It was. It ensures that we see these people as cartoon characters and not as real people. It really undermines the women and Truman Capote. It really shortchanges them.
It does. It feels more like it, like the character developments or the character details that kind of make them feel more dynamic as people are really integral to how you view these people, but they're attached almost like cliff notes towards the end. And I'm like, I really needed to know this about this person in order for me to actually find them compelling. Because like I said, I found almost every character in here completely despicable, and that is completely fine if you make them interesting. You have to give me a reason to be enthralled by an unlikable person. That is very difficult to do, but it's possible if you show me who they are as a person, what drives them, and we don't get that until way too late in the game, which was probably why this was such a struggle for me to watch. I was like, I hate every single person in here, including Truman Capote, and I don't want to feel that way.
Yeah.
Right. Feeling that way sucks. Yeah. Now, I did think two of the Swans, and I'm a huge Diane Lane fan. I even think she's a good Martha Kent. That's how much I like Diane Lane as an actress.
Give a shout out to Molly Ringwald as Joanne Carson, who is actually
who I didn't recognize. Yeah. Oh my god.
And the Swan that is the kindest to him. Apart from CZ Guest. Anyway, Bradley, sorry, go ahead.
Well, we don't know that she's the kindest to him until the finale.
She took him in for Thanksgiving. Remember, they had tamales.
Every one of the Swans at least once gets an earnest, genuine monologue that comes across as fake, that nobody talks like this, obviously. But at the same time, I'm like, wow, that was really good. I loved Naomi Watts's three persons monologue. I thought that was beautiful. Chloe Sevigny, who only gets a monologue in the finale that I loved, who explained... She goes into this very detailed explanation of why living the way she lived hurts. I'm like, damn, she's a great actress. And I actually feel empathetic 8 hours too late towards her character. And Diane Lane, her character, Slim, always mean to everyone in some kind of way.
She's actually the...
She had the biggest ask, I think, to sound
sympathetic. Well, she's also the angriest. I feel like she was the most hurt, apart from Anne Woodward, who, you know, couldn't take it. Wimp. No, I'm just kidding. Bradley, I'll leave it up to you to decide if that should stay in or not. I think Slim Keith was definitely the most hurt by it, and because she was the most relentlessly, you know, steadfast about no. You know, this is, and I can see why, you know, this is, you know, for me personally, it takes a lot for me to let somebody in, to let, you know, to my confidence to the level that those people did, where they would, where I would reveal what the stuff, I don't have similar experiences to them to reveal, but you know.
Right. None of their experiences were relatable, which, I mean, is fine. But like you said, they didn't try and make it relatable on a human level.
It would take a lot for me to get to that point where I could divulge details like that to somebody and for them to go around and just use that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a betrayal. A writer, and
sure. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, you know, when he first releases this chapter. I think it took place in the 1960s, which, of course, was a very different time. And especially in New York society, your reputation, especially as a woman, as a housewife, that is your status. Like, that is what your status is built on, is how other people view you. And if you are in a situation like, for example, Naomi Watts's character is, then it doesn't matter if they change the names or not. Everybody knows that is, like, this is in fact about you. Now, all of your dirty laundry that everyone kind of already knows about is out there and it's in print. So, of course, yeah, it is a betrayal. It's more a betrayal of her than really any of the others. And, of course, they kind of rally around her to be her support system. But what I found so troubling about them and Diane Lane's character in particular is that they put on that show of friendship and support, but they spend pretty much the entire series backstabbing her in their own ways as well. And
yeah,
that's what I found so unrelatable.
That's another part of that world that I thought was interesting in the way it operates, that because I feel there is a loyalty there. It's just not, it's a very unconventional loyalty. It's almost like this understanding that this sisterhood comes with stipulations. Like these are friends who will turn on each other underhandedly, but then will be there for one of them when it comes time to plan her funeral, and will be at her funeral.
Right.
I found that I don't see that a lot in conventional society where people talk shit about somebody or stab them behind their back and then, you know, be there for them at the very end. Also, I find that,
like, literally as well, the, like, end of life. Yeah,
I find that very interesting. I don't want to be part of that world.
Well, let's see what interests we can find in our final thoughts.
It's Sunday afternoon, Bradley. It's okay.
Melina, would you start, please?
I definitely felt more negatively towards this than I think you guys did. I found the pacing to be almost glacial from the very beginning. I really thought this was a mistake to make this 8-hour-long episodes. I thought it was completely overly long. I thought that the character development was stymied by the structure that they decided to go with, and I thought that that was pretty fatal to actually being able to attach myself to anyone, especially when I already find them, you know, kind of shallow, vapid people to begin with. I really do want to say, though, that I think what saves a lot of this are the performances, especially Tom Hollander, who I think is an incredible Truman Capote. There were maybe one or two points where I thought he was exaggerating, and then I actually went and looked up some of the clips that he was emulating with the real Truman Capote, and I'm like, oh my god, no, he's not exaggerating at all. He's spot on. And I thought Naomi Watts, as the swan that we definitely get to know the most, we definitely get the most insight to her as a character, I thought she was phenomenal. And the scenes with the two of them together I thought were magic. I just wish that there had been more of them. That was keeping me afloat for most of it. But I do think that the filmmaking here is very commendable. It looks gorgeous. The costume design, who I believe Zach Posen was behind, is gorgeous. It does put you in that time. I just never found myself engrossed. I never found myself attached. It's a show that I know if I hadn't signed up to review, I would have gotten maybe halfway into the first episode and I would have turned something else on, which I had to stop myself from doing several times anyway. I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 black swans.
And the black swan is the most beautiful. I need to read. Natalie Portman.
You retire that.
Yeah.
I think he was doing James Baldwin there, actually.
So I was reading up, and I found out that when Truman Capote died, Gore Vidal called his death a wise career move, which I thought was
damn. That was 1984 when Capote passed
1984, away. Which I thought was oof. But Capote makes a Rosalind Carter dig in this series, so I don't care what Gore Vidal said about it.
That does not sit well with Frank.
No, it did not. Also, it did not sit well with me is when he recreated, they recreated his supporting role in his in Murder by Death, and recreated badly and incorrectly. And I had a friend of mine, a cinephile friend of mine, text me. He's like, "Did you see the Murder by Death?" Yes, I did. Aren't you mad? Yes, I am. And he's like, "Well, we're probably going to be one of seven homos. Two of seven homos are going to be mad about it, so it doesn't really matter." But I'm with everybody. I'm with you, Melina, on I think the pacing is really bad. We don't get to know these people as people. And I think all of that, all those two problems and the other problems that could be found with this could have been solved if they just told this story in a linear fashion, if they just not made it so jumbled. I think that episode 3, which is the black and white ball and is shot in black and white, is stunning. It is the best episode of this series. It's exquisite. It's incredibly cinematic. It just has a flair about it that's just it's just wonderful. Episode 6, on the other hand, is the weakest. It's where all of the problems show up. The lack of character development, the jumbled storylines. It's so unfocused, and it shows that this entire project was ultimately pretty aimless. That being said, the performances here are really, really great. I think Calista Flockhart was my favorite Swan because that's the kind of person I could never be, but there's a part of me deep down that would kind of like to be sometimes. I like this more than I did. I thought it worked more than I did. I think it's also really less the Ryan Murphy of it. Thankfully, even though he does tarnish it from time to time, but also because A, this is based on a biography by someone who researched all of this, all the events anyways, and because Gus Van Sant knows cinema. I don't like everything he's made. I don't think everybody can like everything he's made, but he does know how to craft a good film. And for the most part, he did it. He did it here. I'm going to go ahead and give this 7 out of 10 digs you give to Rosalind Carter, because how dare you do that, Truman Capote?
That's been haunting your dreams, hasn't it?
When I first saw that, you know, my boyfriend looked at me like, "Oh my god!" And I was like, "Yeah, I guess I did have a little bit of a freak out." But yeah,
I just have such a hard time navigating gossip. I think what he wrote was beautiful, and beautiful portraits of beautiful people. But then also, I guess he did say his husband is cheating on her, and haha, how stupid is that of her to be cheated on? Yeah. So, okay,
With our former second lady, he showed her having her period in the first episode. How could you happy?
Right.
Ugh, that was disgusting.
And I can see, I can see in the context
a poor choice.
That was poor.
Oh, what a loving tribute to Treat Williams, but at the same time, like, oof.
Yeah.
What a rough final performance to play a scuzzball.
He was great though. He was great.
Yeah, he was
excellent. An excellent performer. Yeah. So I can kind of get that. I've never been able to navigate the waters of gossip myself. I'll literally text someone and say it to their face, "I think I was gossiping about you earlier. Let me tell you what I said." I think I've sent both of you actually tweets messages like that once. So this was a rough watch. It was even rougher watch with the whole like, and Truman Capote was a closeted but then outed homosexual, so all his relationships were gross. I'm like, really, Ryan Murphy? Again with
that
this?
Was that era though.
Please
that
stop.
That was that era. And you know, I don't like it when stuff like that is sugar coated. I especially stuff like that.
I can respect that.
That's our history, and it's important that it is portrayed accurately. For me, anyways.
Yeah, I can respect that.
Yeah, in this particular case, it fit.
So I'm gonna lean more towards positive than negative on this too, and give it seven tours through Europe. in Korea. Yeah. Until the next feud, who's it going to be, Frank?
Well,
what bones of the past are they going to dig up next and drag through the
before
mud?
Before this season, immediately after the Bette Davis Joan Crawford season, he wanted to do Charles and Diana, but that was before The Crown was a thing. And then they came in and swooped that.
And I think we've had enough of that for a while.
Yeah. I think we're good. Harry and Meghan. I mean, Harry versus whoever. I don't know.
You know, it won't be the last.
They won't give names. Harry and Meghan have all the dirt, but they don't give names.